Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, you need to listen to this because a landmark new affordable housing scheme that is designed to help bridge the gap for those whose income is too low to afford a big enough mortgage for their first home has been described as a real game changer. There's a lot to this. So to make sense of it all, I'm joined by Dr. Lorcan Sir, Senior Lecturer at Technological University Dublin and Housing Policy Analyst. Lorcan, what a title. Good morning.
Morning, Jennifer.
How are you doing? Thanks for coming
good.
In.
Thanks. Yes, to start the summer, so all is good.
Well, that's what they're telling us. They're telling us that there's a heat wave a coming.
Is there?
Apparently.
Really, you wouldn't know from outside today.
We need it because we've no houses to live in. Now, let's talk about this. Can you explain the scheme in very basic terms?
Yeah. So it's called the First Home Shared Equity Scheme. And Shared equity basically means that when you go to buy a house, and if you don't have all the money, the government are going to step in and buy a portion of your house with you, essentially. So you'll be joint owners. So they can buy up to 30% of the house with you, up to they're subject to certain caps.
Okay.
But it means that, you know, you go and buy 70% of the house and the government buys the other 30%. Now, unlike a mortgage is obviously a loan that the bank gives you. And if your house goes up in value, you still only have to pay off whatever's left in the mortgage. So you can end up with some money for yourself, hopefully. Mm-hmm. With a shared equity scheme, if you borrow 100,000 euro, say, from the government, or they give you 100,000 euro, equity means their share. So if your house doubles in value, you're going to end up having to pay them back 200,000 when you go to sell the property. So that's the difference between a mortgage and equity. So they give you money, but their proportion of it stays the same. It rises and falls with the value of the property as well.
So a good business move on their part.
With taxpayers' money, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you see, if they just gave you a loan and charged you interest on the loan, that'd be like competing with the banks, and they wouldn't do that. So they have to do these. There's shared equity schemes. They do exist in other countries as well. But the value really rises and falls with the value of your house. So when you put everything in housing is luck. You know, when you retire and if you want to sell your house, it might be a good time when you make loads of money out of it, and it might be a bad time when you don't make much after 30 years paying a mortgage. So really, it depends. But the idea is that if there's a gap between people's income and what they need to spend to buy a property, and there's a caps on the properties. So for in Dublin, that'll be 450,000 for a house or 500,000 for an apartment, and all the way down to Tipperary, 225,000 for a house or an apartment. If there's a gap between your income multiplied by 3.5, you know, when you go to the bank, it's only for first-time buyers. Also for divorced people and insolvent people as well, but mostly for first-time buyers. If there's a gap between your 3.5 times your income plus your deposit and the sales price of the house, the government then can step in with the shared equity.
Do they just lump a load of cash into your bank account, or how does it work?
Well, pretty much, yeah. You apply online. It's supposed to be live in the first week in July. Now, I looked last night on the Department of Housing website and I didn't see it, but I'm assuming it's going to be there this week. Yeah, I mean, they'll pay. You know, the bank will give you the mortgage and the government will give the bank, or the bank will, or actually it's AIB, PTSB and Bank of Ireland will stump up the other 100,000 or 50,000 or whatever it is that you need. But what you notice, though, with these kind of schemes that they do nothing to bring down the price of a house, but they do help people afford. So what I like to say is, like, they're busy helping people affording what's on, to afford what's on offer without making what's on offer more affordable, if you know what I mean. So do you want me to run through an example for people?
Please.
So that they can, so they can kind of get their heads around what it means. So if we take a 500 euro 1,000 apartment in Dublin, and which is quite it's not expensive, but it's an awful lot of money. And if you have, say, a couple and they have, say, 50,000 each, so just above the average salary, jobs each, ordinary jobs, 50,000 each, so they have 100,000 coming in. When they go to the bank, the bank are going to give them 3.5 times that. So they'll give them 350,000. So there's still 150,000 left to buy the apartment. Now they'll need to have a deposit. And typically that would be a 10% deposit for first-time buyers. So that'll be 50,000. If they don't have that, they can get the help to buy as well if they've paid tax. Either way, they'll need the 50,000. Then that only brings them to 400,000. So between 400,000 and 500,000, that's the shared equity. So the government will then step in and give them 100,000 to help bridge the gap between the 350 or 400,000 and the sales price of 500,000. Now, in typical terms, if you had a mortgage of 350,000, that's about 1,300 a month over 30 years repayment. The government don't charge any interest on this 100,000 for the first 5 years. But then from year 6 to 10, they charge interest and a different rate of interest then from year 11 to 29. So after in year 6, then you've been paying no interest on this 100,000 and they start charging you then in year six, it adds another 145, 150 to your mortgage every month after year six. And that, but the kicker is, though, when you go to sell it and you borrowed 100,000, you end up paying back 150 or 200,000 or whatever it is, depending on the value of the property.
On the value of the house. Where's the government getting this money? Does Micheál Martin have a massive mattress with a load of cash under?
No, well, they're going to AIB, PTSB and Bank of Ireland and whoever's left in the market. There's a diminishing number of players in the market for mortgages. Whoever's left in the market, I presume the government are going to underwrite that. So people don't, taxpayers basically, if people don't make the repayments, that the government will have to step in and pay it. But they're not using their own money. It looks like they're using the bank's money.
Okay, Lorcan, I mean, it's been described as a game changer. Do you see problems with it?
Well, if people don't make the repayments on it, it's back to the taxpayer. But the key thing with all these help to buy and shared equity and all these things is that they don't make housing any cheaper. What they do is give you more debt, basically. And that's not really what you really want is cheaper housing, more affordable housing, because we have a problem. Like, we have a problem of supply for sure, but actually housing supply has gone up by nearly 50% in the last 5 years. But the amount of housing coming to the market, so you're a estate agent's window, okay, so Jennifer wants to go off and buy a house and she goes to her local estate agent's window, the amount of new housing has gone down by about 40% in the last 5 years as well. So last year there was about 6,000 out of 21,000 new houses that we built, only about 6,000 of them came to your estate agent's window to buy.
Why is that?
Well, partly because the increase, what's happened is we've seen a huge increase in the amount of apartments built for rent all over the place, with the institutional funds. And also, local authorities are buying up a huge amount. For every one house that a local authority builds for social housing, they're buying two. So they're heavily involved in the market and they're competing then against with everybody else. Now, there's lots of reasons for that. They say it's quicker and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, so the amount of housing now that you see come into your estate agent's window is going down every year. And actually, the government's target for this year for private ownership housing is only 30% of total output. Like,
oh,
our home,
God.
Like two-thirds of us own our own homes, either with a mortgage or not with a mortgage, but their target is now 30%. So I'm kind of worried about what they have in mind for home ownership. And in Ireland, you know, all your listeners here, if we're all a man, woman, a child, we're all worth €198,000, right? Most people, when they go onto their Bank of Ireland app or their Ulster Bank app, aren't going to find €198,000 in that app. But when they go home to their home, if they have a mortgage or have it paid off, that's where your wealth is. So we're stopping people accessing home ownership. We're actually stopping them accessing wealth, the way we do wealth in Ireland, you know?
That is so scary.
Kind of is,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, so scary, Lorcan. Oh, God. Are investment funds buying up supply? I mean, is that a problem?
They're creating supply and they're buying up supply. They're doing both. Whether it's a problem or not depends on where you are. I think that we've allowed them to take over, to be honest with you. So over 80% of all new planning applications for you know, apartments in Dublin City are going to be for funds to rent. And really what we need in Ireland, because it's our wealth, like, we all want homes. We want space because our apartment sizes are coming down in size. And like, we're pushing out the average age to have a child in Ireland is now 32. That's the second highest in Europe. And we're getting married later as well. But, you know, if we want to have kids and create the next generation to pay our pensions and all that, you know, people want space. And what we're getting is smaller and more expensive units for rent. And what we need is larger, more affordable units for ownership. And that's all happening in the commuter counties around in the Dublin case, around Kildare and Meath and those places. That's where you see it. But that has its own knock-on effects, because people get into their cars and then drive to work.
Okay, if I'm buying a house now, okay, should I be looking at locking in a mortgage rate ASAP before they go up, or is that wise? I mean, there are people out there who want, it's the Irish mentality, we want to be homeowners, we want to own a house. So if I'm going about it, should I lock in a mortgage rate now?
Yeah, we want to be homeowners because that's where our wealth is. And I think if interest rates are going to go up, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've locked in for 4 years there just because, you know, at least I have certainty then about what my repayments are going to be every month. And if interest rates are going to go up, I know that the banks and the mortgage companies have seen a huge surge in you know, people switching or you know, locking in rates recently.
Now, you mentioned apartments there and they keep building apartments. But why are Irish people, we're a bit against apartments compared to like other European countries, aren't we?
Yeah. And there's a really interesting history to why we're not. Back in the 30s, when we should have been building loads of nice apartments, like, you know, like they did all over Europe, those nice 5-6 story apartments. The church were really against apartments. They didn't like the idea of communal living. Right? Communal living was like socialist, you know, everybody living together. And there's all sorts of interesting tales about the Engineers Ireland telling the public and the church to beware the moral dangers of the common stairwell. You know, in Brockelfats, you'd have a stairwell going up, but not the bottom, where nowadays people would throw bikes. All sorts of stuff could happen down there. So the church were really against it, and they were really pro-housing, and particularly the types. This is why we got all the housing. You know, Crumlin and Cabra and Drimna, you know, those types of housing with the church in the middle. Mm-hmm. That's why we got all those. And in more recent years, and so we built loads of houses, but in more recent years, what we've seen is, you know, we built loads and loads of apartments, but they were poor quality. And the defects and the fire safety issues, and they're small. Yeah. So people just go, I'm not going to do this. I'd rather live, you know, 50 miles away from where I work and buy a car and commute and at least have a bit of space and a house to myself than live in an apartment. And I don't know what we're going to find if we peel back the walls here. Will there be any fire safety or any issues? So we've had huge legacy issues. They're called defects in apartments that we haven't totally resolved yet. I think there's still a long way to go on that. So people are naturally wary of it. But the historical thing is really interesting.
That is funny.
When we never got to that kind of European style, you know.
Are there any positives in the housing situation at the moment? I mean, they're talking about this game changer scheme. It might get people a bit excited, but what do you think?
Well, look, you know, I'm sitting here extolling the principles of this isn't really a great idea at a high level. If it suits you and if it works for you, yeah. And if you need a house and, you know, you want to have a family, or you don't want to have a family, you want to put a snooker table in, it doesn't matter. If you need a house and this works for you, go for it. Absolutely. If it helps you, you know, become a homeowner and give you more mental and physical security and emotional security for the rest of your life, well, absolutely go and use it. The target is about 2,000 of these shared equity units a year for the next 3 years. Not a huge amount. But, you know, if it suits your circumstances and it works for you and there's no other way for things to work, go for it.
Do you think buying a house at the moment is mad?
Look, you know, you got to look at it this way. If you're buying a home and it's somewhere that you want to put down roots and you want to stay, and, you know, it doesn't matter. Just, you know, if you have the money, go and buy it. You can't be gaming the market all the time, because, you know, you might win and you might not win. And in 6 months' time, you think house prices are going down. They might well go up. I think they're probably, the rate of acceleration of house prices is going to slow hugely, I think, by the end of the summer. So now there'll be people sitting in the cars listening to this going, well, hang on till September or autumn. Absolutely. But you're trying to game the system there. I mean, I'm just one guy speculating here in 2FM. But, you know, I think if you want a home and you have the money, it doesn't matter, you know, go for it. And over the lifetime of the next 30 years, 40 years in that house, it'll rise in value, it'll fall in value, it'll rise again, it'll fall in value. You know, and hopefully when you go to sell it at some stage for your fair deal scheme or whatever it is that you need, it'll have gone up.
Yeah, my God. Okay, last question. Should housing be a constitutional right in Ireland? Do you think it should?
Yeah, people get confused about this. They think that if we had a constitutional right to housing, that it would mean everybody had a right to a house. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that there would be a legislative floor on what the government can do. So if the government came up with some policy that kind of actively prevented people from accessing housing, that would be unconstitutional. But it definitely does not mean that everybody has a right to a house. It's a right to housing as opposed to a right to a house. Absolutely, I'd be fully in favour of it.
What about all these vacant properties around the place? I mean,
166,000.
What are the government doing about that? 166 what?
1,000. Well, it's 182,000 in 2016. The census last week came out as 166,000. So they haven't made much inroads into it. You're always going to have a natural rate of vacancy, right? There's always going to be houses empty. People in old folks' homes, houses being sold. And you need that as people move from one house to the other. You need that lift. But we seem to have about twice as much as you'd normally find. You'd normally find somewhere in 4 or 5% of the housing stock is vacant at any one time for loads of reasons, you know, but people going off to work for a year abroad or whatever. Here, it's about 7.8 or 8%. So we've got more than we should have. Every local authority was supposed to have a full-time vacant homes officer by February this year, and only three ended up having them. The rest of them had part-time ones, so I think they weren't taken seriously. I think now, given that the numbers, you know, 166,000, not much different from 182,000 a few years ago, they obviously have made very little inroads into all this. So I think now there should be a bit of a kick in the seat of the pants for them to kind of get on with this. You're not going to sort them all out, but if you could sort, you know, if you could sort 10%, 20%, 30% of them out, that would be, again,
that'd be nice.
But I think, like, the funny thing is, you go down, particularly down the country and places down the west of the country, and you find a brand new house built beside an old house. And you wonder, like, what's wrong with the old house? Like, the most sustainable house you have is the one that already exists. Mm. But yet county councils are given planning permission for big, huge, you know, 240 square metre houses right beside an old house that you could have refurbished and added on to and done a Dermot Bannon on it, all that crack, you know. So we're kind of a bit forward gear and reverse gear, as always, in housing policy.
Okay, can you give me a projection as to, you know, how many years we're going to get out of this mess?
Oh, look, you know, to be honest with you, like a nerd like me goes back and reads Dáil debates from the 1950s about housing. Same stuff going on, right? We're just part of a long kind of, we'll be in the archive having this discussion, and it'll happen in 10 years' time, it'll happen in 20 years' time as well. It's always been going on, variations on the same thing. The difference now is that we have the presence of the international funds, which you didn't have before, and they are more of a game changer than the shared equity scheme, without a doubt. But I think, you know, housing is the gift that never stops giving for someone like me, because there's always something
the
to talk about.
The international, go on, can you explain that for a second?
So they're the investment funds that are building all these apartments. Yeah. So they're international, like they're not Irish. Well, you know, they might have an Irish arm, but most of them are like Canadian teachers' pension funds, New York firefighters' funds. You know, they're coming out of mostly the US and Canada. But the interesting thing about them is it's all Wall Street money. But the interesting thing about them is they're in Germany, they're in the Netherlands, they're in Sweden, they're in Denmark. Some of the countries got rid of them or didn't let them in. Parts of Germany, Spain, Portugal. The Danes had to change their rental law to stop them coming in and jacking up rents. We have taken, like, we let them away with paying virtually no tax, for example, here, which is partly why they're here, and other countries charge them tax. So I think we've let them take over, particularly in the city centres. The danger is now Dublin in 10 years' time will be a very sterile place full of apartments to rent for highly paid tech workers, and everybody, normal people, you know, citizens, inhabitants of Dublin or people who want to, will be all everywhere else.
Will you get Micheál Martin on the phone there and have a chat with him and just
I've spoken to him before about this, and you'd wonder what goes on. Like, you'd also, like, we've had 10 housing ministers in the last 20 years, so they don't last very long. So to me, I think the problem is more the policymakers and the officials rather than the ministers, although some of the ministers haven't been very helpful.
Dr. Lorcan, sir, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us today, and we'll have you back again. Hopefully more positive news more.
I'll work
a
on the positive,
show.
Jennifer. Yeah. Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.